I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. It took Christopher Elbow a while to find his ingredient in the culinary world, but when he did, the result was award-winning chocolates now known across the country. Today, Elbow will share that story and where his artistic creations have brought him. We'll get details on the crafting process, from sourcing cacao beans to converting them into the chocolate jewels that have earned him devoted fans. And when it comes to flavors, we'll hear what goes into finding the right combinations for Elbow bonbons. Then Chris will offer tips for navigating the candy aisle at the store when you get hit with a chocolate craving. We'll get you up to date on chocolate after this hour's news. Say these two words, Christopher Elbow, and what comes to mind? If you're in the Kansas City area, I'm betting that you're now thinking chocolate, as in Christopher Elbow chocolates. His chocolate is stunning in two ways. By appearance, they look like gems, and of course, by taste. In fact, I recently picked my 9 favorite Elbow chocolates for the Kraske collection that you'll hear more about in just a few minutes, and what a fun job that was. But now I want to welcome Christopher Elbow back to the show. Chris, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here.
You didn't go straight into chocolate and confections when you entered the culinary world. In fact, you were a line cook at a country club when you started out. How did you find your way to chocolate?
Well, it was a kind of a long and winding road. My goal coming out of college was to be a chef, maybe someday own a restaurant. There's so many different things that you can do in the culinary world. And as I got kind of deeper into my career, it just kind of kept guiding me ultimately towards chocolate. You know, I discovered the sweets and the pastry side of the
world. I was going to say, you were working that for a while in restaurants, right?
Yeah. Once I started working in I was in Las Vegas and had the opportunity to work in a pastry kitchen while I waited for an opportunity to open up on the line. I never went back to cooking savory food after that. I loved it so much.
Why?
I think for the main reason is we have a little more time to play with our food as opposed to the hot food, you know, sugar, chocolate. You can sculpt these things. You can work with them. And you know, much like an artist works with copper or bronze or paint, it was just something – there was a pace to that kind of – that detail that I just fell in love with and that fit my kind of mindset really well.
So when did you start Elbow Chocolates?
So this was back in 2003. So we've been around for 16 years now, which is hard to believe.
Yeah. How many employees do you have today? How many did you have when you first started out?
Well, when I first started, there was me. My parents were helping. My wife was helping. I had friends helping. And today we have about 35 full-time employees, you know, between our two retail stores and production and shipping operations.
So in the early days, was everything done at just one location?
Yeah, we started actually above Shiraz Restaurant, this great restaurant on Southwest Boulevard.
Right.
That's no longer there. But the owner, a very good dear friend of mine, had a room upstairs that he let me use. And that's kind of where the company was born, in a little 400-square-foot room.
Wow. On the first day your first store opened, do you know how many chocolates you offered? Do you remember?
I have no idea. I know it was a lot less than what we offer today.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we'll go back and look at, we'll see pictures of, you know, a Casey Star story from back 2004, 2005, and look at the chocolates. And we all internally really see how we've evolved over the years and how our product's just gotten better and better and better.
When did you add the confections facility?
So our new facility went online last year. We were spread out over 3 buildings. Kind of as we grew, we grew how we could, you know, with what resources we had. But it turned out to be obviously highly inefficient. So last year was a really big year for us to kind of consolidate our shipping, production, and offices into one location.
And you make everything there now?
We make everything there.
How many chocolates are you producing? Is there a number that...
So we have the capabilities to produce about 100,000 pieces a week, in addition to all the other confections, chocolate bars, toffee, turtles, and things like that.
And these can be different types of pieces, obviously,
different
right?
Types, different, all the different flavors that you see in our store.
How many cities now offer Christopher Elbow chocolates?
We have another retail store in San Francisco, so we have a big presence there. And then there's probably about 40 stores around the country that carry some or all of our line.
But they're not Elbow
they're
candy
not Elbow stores.
They're Elbow chocolates in other people's...
Gourmet food stores, coffee shops, things like that where they make sense.
Busiest time of the year, Valentine's, Mother's Day, Christmas?
Right now.
How's that playing out right now? Because you just told me you're working long hours.
Yeah, for us, it's all about fulfilling orders this time of year. The website orders coming in and corporate orders. Christmas is so challenging because it's such a long season. It's typically 4 weeks, Thanksgiving to Christmas. And we do 5 to 6 times the volume we would in a typical month. In the month of December.
So you have to be making stock and getting back orders ready to go,
yeah,
right?
we've got to enter this season ready to go. And the great thing about this new facility is we became really efficient this year, and we are really set up to be successful this year, and it's proving to be a great thing for our company.
Do you know how much chocolate you're going to need, how many different types of candies you're going to need to make it through the Christmas season?
Yeah, we have a pretty good idea. We have lots of historical data that we rely on to forecast what we think we're going to do, and sometimes we miss it. We're more busy, and we end up having to scramble and get stuff made at the last minute. So the holidays are always a big challenge for us.
Did you ever in your wildest dreams think it would become what it's become?
Never. I kind of explain this a lot to a lot of people, that I'm just hanging on for dear life to this
Is thing
and
right?
let it take me where it's going to go. I kind of had this romantic idea. And my wife tells me this a lot, that I'll work a little bit, make a few chocolates above the restaurant. It'll be great. But, you know, right from day one, it was trying to keep up with demand, which is a fantastic problem for a small business to have.
And that demand is based on what? Do you know what it is about what you're producing that has sparked so much interest out there?
Well, I think when we first started, we were a very different kind of chocolate product on the market. There wasn't a whole lot of people in the country doing what we do.
High-end chocolate.
High-end, taking a very artistic approach to the appearance, using flavor combinations that you traditionally wouldn't think about with chocolate. And what's really important for us is the quality of ingredients that we have sourced over the years, the best chocolate we can find in the world, the best ingredients and flavors. And it was a different thing to talk about people is – we use fresh mint in our mint chocolate. It's not a mint extract, so it's going to taste like you just went to the garden and you know, put some mint in your mouth.
And that's worked.
And that's worked. And I think people responded to that right out of the gate.
I'm Steve Kraske. My guest this hour is chocolatier Christopher Elbow. You know, Chris, one of the things that struck me during the tasting for the Kraske collection, which is available right now, were the flavors you combine with chocolate. Was this something you were interested in doing right out of the gate?
Yeah, playing with these kind of fresh, you know, some would call them unique flavors. They make a lot of sense to me, and they pair really well with chocolate. Was really kind of right out of the gate something we wanted to kind of create this segment. Everybody knows French chocolate, Swiss chocolate, German chocolate, Belgian chocolate. What was American chocolate, though? So we kind of wanted to identify this category. And what we decided right out of the gate was we wanted, the second you put that in your mouth and bite into it, you know exactly what that flavor was.
Mm-hmm.
So big, kind of strong flavors. And the only really way to achieve that is by using the real ingredients, so the real fruit, you know, the real herbs and spices.
Where did your idea for that come from?
I think it was translated from cooking, learning what I learned in restaurants on the line. You know, you can only... your dish is going to be as good as the ingredients that you put into it. You know, you're always going to have this limitation if you're using subpar ingredients. So that kind of mindset followed me through the pastry world and then into the chocolate world.
So I get the sense you're constantly experimenting.
We do a lot of experimenting in the shop. Summertime, when we're a little slower, is always a fun R&D time for us, where we work on new designs and new flavors. We bring in new ingredients and really try to focus on coming up with, you know, 6 to 8 new flavors every year that we can work into our core collection.
Well, let's talk about salt, okay? One of my picks was the Fleur de Sel, a caramel infused with salt wrapped in chocolate, and it's as good as I just made it sound. What is it that makes salt work so well with chocolate? Because it works.
We use salt the same way a chef uses it in the kitchen. It's there to
You don't think of it that way with chocolate.
To accentuate flavors. So caramel, you can really taste the caramel if it doesn't have salt in it. It just tastes kind of flat, you know, a lot more sugar forward. But the second you add some salt to it, it pops those kind of caramelized sugar flavors.
Interesting.
And it accents and makes the chocolate taste better too.
So the key here is finding the right amount of any ingredient to make this thing work.
Yeah, the right ingredient and the right amount of ingredient. Chocolate's a very strong flavor, so when we craft a bonbon, we've got to be very careful on what we're pairing with it. We're really big on the term balance. We don't want whatever flavor we're putting into it to overpower the chocolate and then vice versa.
Is it ultimately your decision when people are debating how much of one ingredient to put in? You decide at the end and settle the debate?
I think typically I've got a super talented team at the shop that has great palates, better than mine, and I trust them. You know, a lot of them have been working with me now for 12 to 14 years, so they kind of know exactly what I expect. You know, when we talk about a concept, they can pretty much deliver it on the first go round.
That's really interesting. In the center of the Kraske Collection box of chocolates is a bright yellow piece. You call it your fresh lemon. And before we even get to the taste, I want to talk about the appearance. When you cut this open during the tasting, it really looked like the flesh of a lemon on the inside. How did you manage that?
So that we actually make a fresh lemon marmalade. It's kind of a French-style jam. And it's really how we like to treat fruit when we put it in chocolate, because you maintain kind of that bright, fresh acidity, you know, as opposed to just kind of mixing it into the filling.
Yeah.
It's the first thing that typically would hit your tongue after you break it open. So you just get this pop right out of the gate, you know. And lemon is one of my favorite flavors. I love lemon desserts, like, you know, lemon tarts when I'm in Europe is something I seek out, or lemon sorbet. So this was kind of loosely modeled after like a lemon meringue pie.
Yeah, it's an interesting word you just used, the pop you want to achieve. Mm-hmm. Is that an ingredient you want in a lot of your different chocolates?
Yeah, especially when we're using a fruit that has an acidic component like raspberry or lemon, lime. You know, when you think about the things you eat those in, they're very strong flavors. You know right when it hits your tongue, that's what you're eating. And we like that kind of explosion of flavor.
There are two more citrus flavors in my chocolate picks, blood orange and calamansi lime. Not just any orange or any lime, but these particular ones. What flavor notes made you pick these when you created these particular chocolates?
So they're just a little more interesting flavors to pair with. Calamansi is a Filipino citrus fruit, and it's got this just beautiful fragrant and floral. A lot of these exotic citruses that we like to play with, they go really well with chocolate, but they're really different and subtle, and they just are perfect. I think.
How did you find it?
Just doing research, you know. A lot of our inspiration comes from traveling, or, you know, if we eat at a restaurant and there's a component of a dish that has something in it that I don't quite recognize, or...
And you think right away it might work well in chocolate?
Unfortunately, that's where my mind is always, you know, is that going to work with chocolate? It's the first thing that pops into my head. But there's just so many ingredients from around the world that are so exciting and fun, harder to get sometimes. But, you know, we work hard to source these unique things.
I want to get to the Persia chocolate. That's the blue one in the Kraske collection, and I think it's maybe the most complex. What was the starting point for this one? The marzipan, the spiced dark chocolate, what was it?
So this started from the concept of baklava, actually. So almond marzipan, we put a little amaretto and orange flower water in it, and then the spices that are in the ganache would be like cardamom, little saffron, clove, cinnamon. So you kind of get this, you know, like your all the spices, all the flavors that are in a really good baklava. We wanted to kind of represent that in this the ingredient.
You know, just quickly, is there any flavor you absolutely refuse to use with your chocolate? Is there one you just knock off the list right away?
Not really. We've tried all kinds of things, and just some things don't work. We tried in earnest to create a barbecue chocolate, and we just could not get it to work.
Really?
And we tried it several different ways, smoking the chocolate, using barbecue sauce, or just the spices, and it just didn't taste very good. And that kind of goes to our philosophy of, if it doesn't taste good to us, it's probably not going to taste good to the customer.
I'm talking with Christopher Elbow, the mind behind the creations you'll find at Elbow Chocolates. Chris, I have to admit, before this, I didn't know anything about how chocolate is made. But it all begins with the cacao. And I'm not – it's a not-so-pretty fruit, I think, originally found in the Amazon basin. Now it's grown from Hawaii to Africa. How do you choose your cacao beans?
So this is
a big deal in your business.
This is a big deal, and it's a bigger deal over the years. You know, at the beginning, we buy really good chocolate from this company in France, and we melt it, transform it into what, you know, the confections that you'll see in our store. But about 3 or 4 years ago, I started having the opportunity to travel to some of the farms and see this process. I've been working with chocolate for 10 or 15 years and never really thought about where it comes from and the impact that our decision as a company on what chocolate we use and purchase has in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So while we are a very local company, we have, you know, that decision has very global implications. So our goal, we started making our own chocolate from the beans, bringing them in, roasting them, refining them, and processing them into chocolate about 3 years ago.
Hmm.
Totally different mindset on what we do, the beautiful confections. It's just that it's just a different process. But it's really given me and our company kind of this deeper understanding of what this chocolate product is, how it's grown, how challenging it is to grow. And like you said, it originated in the Amazon basin, grows typically 20 degrees north and south of the equator. The bulk of the world's chocolate comes out of Western Africa. Lots of social and political problems, you know, unfortunately, where cacao is grown are some of the poorest parts of the world.
So it's a farm product. It's an agricultural product. And people don't think of chocolate in that light at all.
Yeah. And that's kind of one of the most, you know, if I talk to somebody and if there's anything I can get them to understand that there's this huge agricultural, you know, component that takes place before that bean ever hits the factory. And it's a really remarkable fruit. I'm always fascinated by food on how people figured out how to make things or eat things. And this is, you know, if you see the pod on a tree and then you have to open that up and get through this kind of citrusy flesh down into the seeds, and that's actually the beans that become chocolate. But they're so inedible out of the pod, they're so bitter that they have to go through a fermentation process, which takes 5 to 7 days, and then a drying process that takes another week before they even get to us, and then we can start to manipulate them in the roasting process.
I watched some video about all this, and you actually see workers sort of spreading out the, I guess, what is it, the cacao at that point, and allowing it to sit in the sun for a while?
Yeah, so that's after the fermentation. It needs to be dried, and the best cacao is sun-dried. So, you know, depending on the climate and the area where it's grown, a lot of the bigger kind of cacao will mechanize that drying, you know, using fire, steam, smoke, which affects the flavor and the finished product. But we've really found the farms that we're working with and visiting in Central South America, that sun drying, you know, doing it that right way, really allows us to get a better product.
Hmm. You really have a vision for, in the next few years, really understanding even more fully where the chocolate for Christopher Elbow Chocolates actually comes from.
Yeah, and kind of the good thing about being a small company is that we are going to have the ability to really understand where all of our product and ingredients come from. I think that's a very important thing, you know, and becoming more important for the consumer. So our goal by the end of 2020 is to be able to tell you exactly who is growing this chocolate that we're using, whether we're making it or not. So we are, and it's going to be a big endeavor. You know, we're going to have a lot of sourcing and traveling and understanding. But it's going to go in conjunction with what we're creating down at our store at McGee, this chocolate cacao experience, where we want to invite people in and take them on a tour, teach them about cacao, how it's grown, where it's grown, how it gets transformed into chocolate, And then they'll be able to turn around and see every step of that process and taste everything.
You really want to turn this into something of a museum at 18th and McGee, right?
Yeah, this experience, we haven't quite named it yet, but this cacao experience is, I think, something it's kind of my passion project right now.
Wow.
To really have people just at the very least second guess, you know, before they purchase chocolate and have them really think about where it comes from.
That's interesting. How much beans does Elbow Chocolates go through, like, in a typical week or month?
I don't really know if I could answer that, but in a year, we buy in between 25 to 30 tons of chocolate. So that's about our yearly usage.
What's a ton cost you?
We're using really good beans. So even the chocolate that we're buying from other companies that are making it for us are sourcing really good beans. None of this is a commodity grade beans that you'd see traded on the open market. So we're starting in the industry with what's called fine flavor chocolate, really good genetics, good varietals, and good practice post-harvesting practices.
Are you buying a year ahead of time, or do you buy as you go?
We just kind of buy as we go. We order it in, you know, 3 to 6 ton batches.
I didn't really realize that a raw cacao really doesn't wind up tasting like chocolate. You can't tell it's chocolate.
No.
It's like coconut. You eat coconut and you think it's going to taste like an Almond Joy, and that's not it.
Yeah. And actually, there's some, you know, one of the worst things I've ever eaten is a seed out of the pot on a farm. It's so bitter. And then, you know, through that fermentation process, you develop a lot of other flavors and aromas like acetic acid, so vinegar. That plays a key role in that fermentation. Mm-hmm. So sometimes when we get a bag of beans and you open it up, you just get blown over by this vinegar smell. And it's not until we start roasting do you start to really, you know, get that familiar chocolatey smell.
Wow. This is Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske, and with me today is master chocolatier, that's Christopher Elbow. You know, Chris, the average American consumes about 10 pounds of chocolate a year, which sounds a little low from my standpoint.
I agree.
And I'm a pretty average American, but there isn't always an Elbow chocolate source around when the craving hits. So I'm wondering, let's talk about getting the most out of the chocolate in the candy aisle. If I take the time to, you know, grab the bag or the bar and read the ingredients, what do I want to look for? What do I want to see?
I think what I would always explain to somebody is if you're in the candy aisle and a chocolate craving strikes, you know, you can eat a candy bar or you can eat a chocolate bar. We kind of talk about candy and then we talk about chocolate.
Okay.
Candy to us is something you eat passively without really thinking about it, right? You just want sugar. You just want chocolate. We consume with a little more of a conscience. You know, we think about it, you know.
Like wine, maybe.
Like wine. You know, what I want to get out of chocolate is, you know, that I know that it's been sourced well from a reputable company, which is hard to decipher when you're standing in a grocery store.
I was going to say, can you tell that? Yeah.
In a grocery store, not so much. Good thing you have smartphones now. You know, and again, when we talked about this chocolate experience that we're going to create, the one thing I want people to walk away with is to make them stop and think a little bit when they are in the grocery store about their choice. You know, we as consumers can vote with our pocketbook. And that's really one of the best ways that we're going to make a change in the cacao world is people demanding that they understand where their chocolate comes from.
Is there a fair correlation that the more you spend on a bar of chocolate, the better the prospects are that it's well-sourced and the ingredients are above grade?
I think there is a correlation. Probably what I would say is the smaller the company is, the better the chocolate is going to be sourced.
Oh, that's interesting.
Is always probably going to be, you know, the big commodity grade chocolate, you know, the big companies, they don't have a choice. They got to buy, you know, however, hundreds of millions of tons a year, no matter where it comes from. The smaller companies have the luxury of being able to charge this premium price for their raw ingredients, so they can source better chocolate.
Huh. Well, speaking of ingredients, one of your creations was ranked the number one chocolate nationally by Food and Wine back in 2009, and it had your take on Pop Rocks in it. So anything goes here, or
anything goes. That was just kind of, you know, we consider ourselves pretty serious, so that we just kind of wanted to do something that was a little more whimsical and fun.
Yeah.
And Pop Rocks and that bar proved to be more popular with adults than kids, actually, just from a nostalgia perspective.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. So I'm not a bad person, then, if I go for the Snickers and not for the straight-up chocolate bar, then?
No. I think we can still consume that kind of product. There's a place and a time for that.
Yeah.
But again, I think being able to, have the consumer stop and think, about and not just with chocolate. This goes with anything. There's a lot of parallels in coffee, wine, spirits, things like that share a lot of the same challenges that chocolate has.
Okay, your 10-point bonus question here. Dark milk or white chocolate, and what's the difference between them? Help me there.
So dark chocolate is always going to be my favorite. However, there's some really great milk chocolates that I love. White chocolate has its place, and the reason it's white is because it doesn't contain any of the cacao fiber. So it's cocoa butter, milk, sugar, and vanilla. So it's really more about sugar and the milk and the vanilla in that.
So that's why I like it so much.
but it pairs well, and you'll notice where we use that is with very acidic ingredients like that lemon, that we can use that acidity to cut that kind of sweetness.
Yeah. I do see what looks like high-end chocolate bars that state the percentage of cacao they contain. Is a higher percentage better?
That's kind of a loaded question. I think along the lines, people have equated that higher percentage to better quality, and
right. That's
not always the case. You can have a 70% chocolate bar that's, made with really poor ingredients or poorly made. I think from a health perspective is where the percentage comes into play for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of news over the last few years about chocolate being this really great antioxidant, and it is. It's one of the highest antioxidant foods on the planet.
You'll find more of that in dark chocolate?
It's in the dark chocolate, so... And what I tell people on the percentage is really the only thing to gauge from that is how much sugar is in that. So in 70% chocolate bar, 30% is going to be sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So 80%, you're going to have a less sweet. You're going to have more cacao, more antioxidants.
Oh, that's interesting. Once I've registered the chocolate flavor in my mouth, what else should I be aware of when it comes to flavor and texture and mouthfeel that tells me if I've actually got a fairly decent piece of chocolate going or not?
So there should be an evolution of that flavor when you put it in your mouth. When you first bite it and break it up, I encourage you to just let it melt on your tongue and in your mouth, because as it starts to melt, these different flavors and aromas start to evolve. Cacao can be very fruit forward. We have some, particularly one of my favorites is from Madagascar, that it tastes like there's citrus and raspberries in it. And it's just inherent in the bean itself.
Oh, that's interesting.
Earthy and more coffee and nutty-like, So that's why we like to encourage get three or four of these single origin bars and just, eat them side by side. It's just a fun exercise.
So Mounds or Almond Joy, what's your pick?
Ooh, Almond Joy.
Really?
Yeah. I love nuts and chocolate.
Do you ever eat a mass-produced chocolate bar yourself? Do you go there?
Every now and again. And it's really just a kind of a check, against the product we're making. Are we still on the
check.
Right track?
What do you go for?
So I have my guilty pleasure is Butterfinger.
Okay, now we're talking. now the truth
but
comes out. Yeah,
I like to scrape the chocolate off, and we put really good chocolate on it. So,
oh, you're kidding me. Oh, wow. I want to thank Chris Elbow, the creative mind behind Elbow Chocolates. Thanks so much for your time today.
My pleasure.
Great
Happy
to have
be
you
here.